Welcome, everyone. We're
Hello.
back.
Hey.
Everybody's here.
I'm so
Finally.
happy. I know. I'm sorry for failing you guys for a while there.
Didn't fail anybody. You just were, you were on yon horizon. What were you doing in London?
I was doing interviews for Thor: The Dark World. So I was gazing into Chris Hemsworth's eyes and falling.
Jealous.
Pretty tough.
Super jealous.
Yeah, it's hard
So you were in
life.
London or Asgard?
It was like there's a little portal that gets me between the two. It's pretty impressive. When you see the movie, you'll understand.
All
right.
I hope that there was a rainbow bridge involved at some point.
Oh my God, I would love it. And if only if Idris Elba was standing there to welcome me into
He should
his
have been standing there
terrifying
in
gold
full,
contacts.
in full costume. He should have been standing in front of the junket room.
Yes, I'm
Did
sure he's
anyone
not paid
propose
enough.
recasting you in the Natalie Portman role?
Oh, I don't know. I think Natalie Portman is too terrifying to ask about that. I think she's gonna
Okay.
hold on to that shit. I don't know. Maybe she isn't holding on to it. She doesn't need the cash anymore. Who knows?
Well, we have so much to discuss since the four of us haven't been together in a while.
I know.
And I wanted to start with the Gotham Awards, just get quick reactions. It's a few days old now, so you've had time to let it sink in.
Right, to wa let it wash all over us.
Did it leave any gross residue, or are you happy with it?
That's a leading question.
I think it's a good field. I think when you're talking about an awards race where we're already anticipating 12 Years a Slave to show up in all of the big awards, it can't help but be a little sort of like, oh, well, yes, 12 Years a Slave is an independent film, so naturally it would qualify here. But it's not like it's all I'm already feeling that like, well, this isn't exciting because this is what I thought was going to be there.
And yeah,
Yeah.
independent, produced by Brad Pitt and distributed by Fox and
Right,
Klein.
exactly. But there's stuff like Blue Caprice is not a slam dunk in any of the indie awards this year, so I'm really
No.
happy when something like that will show up because that's really something that, people need to hear about to know that it exists to go see it.
Have
So,
any of you guys seen Blue Caprice?
yeah.
I love it.
It's
Really?
really good. It's very,
I've
very
heard
good.
mixed things, but I have not spoken to any of you, and so.
I was mixed on it at Sundance, so maybe we should set aside Blue Caprice time at some point.
Well, as Nick and I know from our own jury duties over the past couple years, whenever you have like a small committee deciding things, you do end up like for better and worse having. It's really hard to like end up with the consensus titles only, which is good.
Yeah, I like that.
It's just that for me, I just wish the consensus titles that had made it were different consensus
Right.
titles.
Why can't they be my consensus title?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll just say my pet peeve here is Inside Llewyn Davis, because I've just had a tough time understanding why people are so into it. And in addition to that, the Coen brothers hardly need the support of the Gotham Awards.
I think it's more along those latter lines for me too. Although Nick, you seem to have really liked the movie, and you just saw it recently, yes?
I just saw it Thursday, yeah. I do like it, but I mean, I guess I kind of don't know that I have a huge sense of the remit of the Gotham Awards anyway. Like, why we need them? Like, it just kind of seems like firstism. And my memory was that they used to kind of really strongly gravitate towards stuff that wasn't even going to get nominated at the Spirits. And
Well, they used to have a whole category called not playing in a theater near you, which they don't have this year. So, like, that one really hardcore indie thing they had is gone in favor of best actor and best actress categories, which are new. So it is kind of getting closer to that firstism.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that not playing is not there, because what is if you are celebrating independent film, that seems like a perfect award to have.
Well, and that we really do kind
Yeah.
of need a more Indie Spirits Award. Not that, I mean, I still pretty much love the Indie Spirits, but like there is a necessary alternative to like the Indie Spirits let in too many non-indie things. You know what I mean? That
Yeah.
are indie in word and not deed and that kind of thing. So, we could use something that's a little more niche than that. And I think you see they're trying to do so, but maybe have it be a little bit more explicit in their mandate to not only award but inform the public.
Well, I mean, at this point, they're all Sundance, and we need a Slam Dance at this point, you know?
Yeah, sure. Well, and so many of these titles were at Sundance, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It's a big Sundance lineup. So the one interesting thing that has Saul pointed out by somebody, I can't remember who, is that the Butler might have been in here and isn't. And do you guys attribute that to it mostly being critics selecting this, or do you think that's somehow indicative of the Butler's fading presence in all conversations?
Well, I don't know that... I don't actually know who's on the nominating committee for the Gotham Awards. I don't know.
It was in my press release. It was a lot of critics who I know.
Oh,
and
it was
some industry people, but a lot. There's a good portion of critics, at least.
Mm. I would just assume it was because it's... I mean, this doesn't stop them all the time, but it feels very much like a Hollywood movie.
That was 12 Years a Slave.
Well, at least with 12 Years a Slave, it's like, you know, people think of Steve McQueen as a genuine, like, sort of, I hate to use the term now, which has been destroyed over the years, but a genuine maverick,
mm-hmm.
you know? Whereas Lee Daniels, even though he's very much his own director, he doesn't have that sort of cachet, you know?
Yeah.
I think it'll be tough to try and glean anything from the presence or absence of the Butler in any of the precursors, just because I feel like this is a movie that could get nothing going up through the race, and then all of a sudden the Golden Globes hit and it's huge, and the Oscars hit and it's huge, just because I think that's probably how it'll be campaigned. Mm-hmm. I feel like it probably won't even try to go for the more critic-based things, because that's not where its appeal lies, and I feel like, you know, with the Weinstein Company and everything like that, like, there's a strategy to be had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think once you've hit $100 million and you're starting to look more like The Help than like Fruitvale,
right,
I think that you may not even want to sort of steer a path for yourself as independent, but I also can't not project my own, like, that's a bad movie, so that's not...
Yeah.
Right.
Now
right.
that so October's been full of really good movies, maybe we don't have to kind of pretend that that's the end of the contingent anymore.
Exactly. That's my feeling exactly. Although I still do think Oprah could worm her way in there because supporting actress. Which
you guys really think it's over in terms of Oscar? Because I do not.
What? So in terms of quality?
No, in terms of nominatability, because that implied that you both thought only Oprah might.
Oh, no. I don't think it's over. I kind of wish that it was over.
Okay.
I would like for us to just leave it where it is and focus on stuff that I think is better.
I'm probably close to that, too, although I still have a hard time seeing it getting... I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it got nothing or only Oprah. It feels like a good candidate for the, like, what happened to this sort of narratives later.
I do feel like the relative quality of so many of the October releases certainly doesn't do it any favors.
Yeah.
But I also think that, like, it's a long road to January,
mm-hmm.
and the quality of all these October movies is awesome now, and I'm super psyched about it, but I wonder if, you know, where that buzz will be come January.
I mean, the knives are already out for so many of these movies, though, so...
Oh, they're out for all of them. Like, there's you know, anti-camps for everything.
Any thoughts on Frances Ha?
I was bummed, but not surprised.
Yeah, I don't know if any of you read my little conversation with Greta Gerwig. I had the accidental misfortune of talking to her directly after the snub.
Oh, no.
And I didn't realize that she didn't know, so I was mentioning, like, award season. And anyway, it was a little bit embarrassing, but she was a good sport about it. And,
Oh, shit.
Yeah, she was a good sport about it and gave me a really great quote on her feelings about, so everybody should read that. I was surprised, though. Like, I'm not even going to pretend I wasn't, because it's a New York movie,
mm-hmm.
and the Gothams used to feel like the, you know, the East Coast division of the Spirit Awards. So it just surprised me a little.
Although I think a lot of movies that for the critic community and the indie community, a lot of people think of that as 2011, and I think those are 2012. What
2012.
What year is this now?
It's 2013.
That movie actually came out in 2006, which a lot of people.
It's the Margaret of this year.
It's not All the Boys Love Mandy Lane.
All the boys do love Frances Ha.
That's a really good example of a movie that could have used a Gotham bump. That, I mean, although I still would expect it to show up at the Spirit somehow. That would be really weird if it sat on both.
Can I say my favorite story about the Gotham Awards?
Sure.
When Melanie Lynskey last year got nominated for that Breakthrough Actor category,
yeah.
And somebody asked her about it, and she was like, you know, when I was touring for Hello, I Must Be Going, everybody was like, wow, you finally broke through. And, I mean, I was nice about it, but I kind of thought I'd been around, like, you know, but okay. And then I got nominated for Breakthrough Actor, and they were like, you shouldn't be in this category. You've been around forever. And it's like, I thought you just told me I... Look, everything's fine. I don't really understand what my career is now, but okay.
Oh, Melanie. Love her. Love
yeah,
her.
That category will always be a vague.
Yeah.
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 A vague one.
Although this year it's, I don't know. I mean, I guess Catherine Hahn is a breakthrough because she's been acting forever, but that was a different kind of role for her, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think sometimes that's how they sort of fudge the breakthrough thing. It's like, well, you've been around for a good while, but, like, this is you doing something we didn't.
Right, I mean, see. But, like, actually all of them, other than Lupita Nyong'o, are already famous. So,
well, relatively. I mean, Robin Weigert is relatively famous, but not.
She's been an Emmy nominee. She's been around for years, you know.
That's true. Maybe they're just planting their flag on Dane DeHaan before Spider-Man. Be like, no. We called it.
But what about Chronicle? I mean, he already
Yeah, I know. It requires ignoring Chronicle.
And Michael B. Jordan requires ignoring two very famous television shows. I mean, I don't know.
It's a slippery slope, though, where you all of a sudden risk limiting yourself to, like, debut performances only, because somebody will have noticed somebody anyway.
That's true. And then somebody like me would have been, I saw them in Stage 3 years ago.
That's right. Speaking of first impulses, yeah.
It's just called Breakthrough Actor, except to me.
Yeah. Then you're just sort of like hipster Little Mermaid and just like, well, I saw such
a Now, I know, Nick, you haven't seen The Counselor, right?
I just assumed Lupita in it anyway.
I have not seen The Counselor.
No, okay.
I think I shall not.
Okay.
I will not in a box. I will not.
Well, all I want to say about it at this point, given that, you know, not all of us have seen it, is that Joe's prediction that Cameron Diaz actually turned into a cheetah from
so
the trailer.
So close.
What she ended up doing was no weirder than
Oh, so you did go see it, Joe?
Yeah, I saw it yesterday. I saw it yesterday morning.
Did you feel as guilty about choosing to go see it as you seemed to when you were deciding?
Well, I saw Blue is the Warmest Color first, so I didn't feel that guilty. I made the correct choice in terms of priority. It's not a bad movie, but Cameron is terrible in it.
And
I was not expecting that, and I was really kind of crestfallen about that because I was really expecting something fun and good. And I think she's capable of doing really good work. I just think that was too much of a task for her or something. But
I mean,
like,
it's a tough role, but it's also a terrible movie. So, like, what are you going to do?
I think of it more of as a fascinating failure. And I've mostly talked to people who are kind of into defending it. So I'm interested to talk to people like, you know, that I know who just really are willing to call it terrible. But I kind of suspect that Cameron Diaz I suspect the performances were given very different direction. Like, I think Ridley Scott was putting Cameron Diaz in a completely different movie than Michael Fassbender was in. Wow. I mean, they're barely in any scenes together, so that doesn't even surprise me. Like, I felt like she was going for something that wasn't on screen. You know, there's entire scenes, like, there's one where Edgar Ramirez, where she confesses to him, he's a priest.
Yeah.
There's no role in the movie whatsoever. You cannot figure out why it's there. And I just have to assume it's part of a version of the movie that we didn't get to see.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Yeah.
But that's being generous. So, I mean, I don't know. You have to go with what's actually on the screen.
I just, more so than the quality of the movie, which I do feel like there's a way in which this movie is okay in terms of, like, it's basically, it's much more Cormac McCarthy than it is Ridley Scott,
mm-hmm.
which is not surprising because I don't think Ridley Scott at this point in his career has that strong of a directorial stamp that it was going to overwhelm the literary stamp that Cormac McCarthy has. Like, I feel like that the stronger element won out. I just can't imagine opening this movie wide at all. Like, what could they have possibly been thinking other than, like, we're going to try and fool as much of the audience as possible with this thing full of stars and making it look like this sort of, like, action thriller. And when it, like, has all the action thriller elements, but it's all wrapped around just this series of one-on-one dialogues about mortality and
about
evil
what's,
and tension.
And about what's
going
to happen at the end of the movie. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I was so bored from the start because I was like, oh, okay, monologue number one, that's foreshadowing this. And then monologue number two, I was like, okay, this will happen now. And it's just like every... It had a certain... I know it was going for a certain, you can't stop what's coming, No Country for Old Men, but I just found it very, extremely off-putting from the beginning, because I knew everything that was going to happen, because they kept telling me, and then everything that was happening was repulsive, so even once they got to the showing part, instead of the telling part, and I generally enjoy showing parts more.
Yeah,
Nathaniel genuinely enjoyed showing parts more.
We'll get to blue as the warmest colors.
Hey, there's some showing parts in The Counselor too that actually there's the one part where you think they're going to show it and then they don't because it's a wide release American movie. So
at the beginning you're talking about.
I was talking about the suckerfish on the windshield.
Oh yes.
Oh my.
That needed a little Abdella. What's the name of the guy who directed Blue is the Warmest Color?
I'm not even going to try.
Kashisha.
Yeah, that needed a little Kashisha.
I will say, like, it made me really, really appreciate No Country for Old Men all the more, and that's a movie I appreciate to the hilt anyway, but it made me appreciate how much the sort of, if not clashing, then at least, like, differing styles of the Coen brothers and McCarthy really ended up creating something really exciting, and I feel like you just might need a director or filmmakers with much more of a strong hand to be able to guide it. Like, I feel like I just don't know what Ridley Scott does anymore.
Yeah, and I felt like he was kind of in some parts really misunderstanding what McCarthy was trying to do. Like, there are moments where he really pushes for emotion, and he brings in the score, and you get these tight close-ups on Michael Fassbender crying, and you're like, I don't think that's what this is about. I don't think we're supposed to feel bad for him. He's not really enough of a person. He doesn't have a name.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
And he's been warned, like, for the first hour of the movie to not do what he's doing.
There lies the road to ruin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I have not encountered a movie in quite a while whose MacGuffin was as MacGuffin-y as this, where it's just sort of like, what is even happening? Drugs? Question mark? Like, that's basically, like, what the plot of this movie is. It's just sort of like, I guess? Juarez? Yeah. Something? I don't know.
And then it turns into a disaster, and it just kind of gets fixed off screen, and you're like, oh, so everything's back to where it was, but now everyone's dead?
Right. Like one person needs to win, so they pick
Spoiler
one
alert. Everyone's dead.
I don't even think that counts as a spoiler.
Also, nobody is seeing The Counselor now or ever, so I think we're pretty safe.
I need to see if it made more than The Fifth Estate, which is...
I can't imagine.
More than The Fifth Estate.
What?
I don't know if anything has ever made less than The Fifth Estate. It's open.
Motherhood was...
Oh, did that open wide?
Oh, God.
No. I just remember the stories. Anyway, that's mean. I love Uma. So... But anyway,
I have a strong feeling that what Cameron Diaz needs to do is call Showtime and pitch The Days and Nights of Lottie Schwartz, and everybody would watch an hour-long show about her and all of her fucking animals from Malkovich. Like, that's the only way forward, I see. And she would win an Emmy. She would.
For sure.
She's making a Bad Teacher sequel. You know, she's got stuff going on.
But I thought The Bad Teacher was becoming a TV series.
That's what I
heard. I think it's doing... Both.
I might
have my wires crossed.
Because if any film can bear the weight of books and television adaptation,
there's so much mythology there that I'm really dying to hear about.
Oh goodness. Well,
Bad Teacher Miami. Bad Teacher Los Angeles.
Bad Teacher Cold Case.
Bad Teacher Teacher's Pet.
Bad Teacher Redemption Island.
Way to bring it back to reality TV.
Bad Teacher Coven.
American Horror Story Coven pretty much is Bad Teacher Coven.
Oy. So, you know, we're far astride from Joe's great comment that was going to be the natural segue to our next topic when he was talking about, I don't know what Ridley Scott does anymore.
Uh-huh.
But let's backtrack. So let's talk about directors, because one of the most interesting films, whether or not you like it, one of the most interesting directorial moves in terms of a career this year is J.C. Chander's All Is Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a purposeful 180 from his All Talking All the Time debut, which was Margin Call, and now we have a no talking.
No talking at all. Yeah.
No talking one character from All Talking Ensemble.
The funny thing is about All Is Lost is it's no talking even more so than the premise would suggest. Whereas I feel like a movie where it's one character sort of lost at sea for the entire movie could probably get away with a good 20% more talking than we even get.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you could get away with him just sort of like talking to himself and trying to like talk himself through his problems. And anything like what I would do, I would probably be a nonstop fucking chatterbox of nervousness if I was in that situation. But I feel like there's even a more of a conscious choice to keep it as...
Yeah.
Wordless as it is. I thought that was really interesting.
I mean, listen, I talk to myself even when things are going relatively well.
Right?
I can't imagine, I can't imagine being silent if my life was in danger.
It would just be a constant stream of, like, oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck, like, the entire time. Like, oh.
Which is why we are not Lost at Sea with Robert Redford, since none of us... Right. That movie would have been 5 minutes long if it had been me trying to survive.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It would have been almost as short as Gravity. I would have ruined every movie out right now. You can have my ship. Just throw me in the Indian Ocean. I would have made every movie in October 5 minutes long.
Realistic yet boring movies with the film.
Starring Nick Damus.
But I was so glad that they didn't invent like a fucking volleyball for him to talk
right.
to or just
yeah.
like some lame device to...
Or a tiger.
I know we all love the volleyball. Whatever. I'm not starting something, but...
He's trying to derail Wilson's supporting actor campaign.
That's right.
I heard that he blocked Uggy from a spot in that movie, too.
No, yeah, I really enjoyed the movie. I think even more so... as a directorial showcase than an actor showcase. And I feel like that's probably the aspect that we're going to be focused on as award season moves on through. But I think it's much more for me, I'm much more excited about the possibilities this sort of holds for J.C. Chander than even for Robert Redford, who is good. Like,
yeah.
he's not bad. He's, you know, he's quite good with a very tough acting challenge. But I liked just the task-oriented nature of the plot of this movie, where it
yeah.
was just sort of like one thing naturally leads to the other, and there's not a whole lot of room for sort of... I know there's points where he writes in his journal and things like that, but there's not a ton of room for unnecessary flights of fancy and philosophizing.
I think I liked it a little less than everybody else because I just kept wondering what the tasks were.
Hmm.
Like, for such a task-oriented movie, like, I felt like a lot of times I did not understand what he was trying to do.
But I definitely felt that way the one time I was on a boat with somebody who had one. Like, and it just seemed like making one go is a whole series of tying knots and untying knots and winching things. And
uh-huh.
I just expect to not get it. I know what you're saying. Like, whatever he did when he sailed around the giant, what are they called? Cargo, whatever, the big giant floating thing.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
Beginning.
Oh, the
it was some whole complicated maneuver that he does first, and I was like, "Yep, I'm not sure."
Well, yeah, and then but there's a lot of like where you watch him doing something, and then it kind of falls together. Like you see him sharpening a stick, and you can't figure out what he's doing, and he's making
oh, yeah.
a lever for the bilge pump, or and then
yeah,
he'll
yeah.
like you know he'll be setting up things out of the boat that are labeled like emergency raft, or you know, because on boats everything is labeled, everything has a place, so it will be
yeah.
written in large letters what he's doing.
Well, yeah, and when I had text to help
oh,
me,
no, sure.
I was fine.
Well, I was thinking about how like I would be confused up to that point, and then that
read.
Would clear it up for me. Really? I've enjoyed the being lost in it because I liked asking the questions. Like I kind of felt like I was engaged in his activity. You know, he's sitting there being like, okay, what am I going to do? How am I going to fix this? And I'm sitting there being like, okay, who is he? What can I learn from what I'm surrounded by? It kind of puts you in his headspace in this really interesting, kind of like really dramatically different way. You know, having just seen Gravity, which I think many people will have.
Mm-hmm.
It's
like,
the
it's
most,
such a good,
in many
it's
ways, and not to disparage it, it's kind of the most immersive SAT word problem you've ever seen, where it's just sort of like, here's your situation, here are your materials. Now,
yeah.
how are we going to like, how are we going to solve this?
And me and Katie are like, quit.
Yeah.
Quit.
Well, when
and
they have
escape,
all those,
please.
Katie mentioned all those big
shark.
Like
Bad Sailor MacGyver edition.
But everything was so clearly marked, and the one was just like knife. And I'm like, okay, well now I know how I would get out of that situation.
It makes such a fascinating contrast to Gravity, and I really, I like both of those movies a whole lot, and I like that this one is kind of is a fair way to say it, but it is playing with its narrative in such a fascinating way that's so dramatic and bold that I just didn't expect out of J.C. Chandor, which I really give him so much credit for.
Yeah.
Do any of you feel like this was, like, completely, like, a career move, though? Like I was saying, like, I'm going to show them what else I can do, or do you think it was more organic? Like, did you feel like it was a stunt at all while you were watching it?
I feel like it can be purely a career move and not be a stunt, though. I feel like there's... I feel like I don't necessarily need this to be a story that sort of springs from his most innermost, like, storytelling desires. I feel like it's a stunt if it's emptier than what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like stunt is something that has a little bit of a value judgment on it, and...
Yeah, because it's done so well, I kind of...
I think it sort of, yeah, it skirts stunt that way.
Nick, you haven't said much.
I'm introverted.
would you talk to yourself on a boat?
I would probably be the whole time using my last few hours to finally decide who I'm voting for in 87 Best Actress out loud. So, like, I would die by being like, Holly? No. Holly or Glenn? No, Meryl. That would be me at the end of all this. But,
You'd eventually put that in a bottle and set it out to drift. And
right. Olive lost. I can't decide on my vote.
And that's Sally right. Kirkland finds it on a shore somewhere and picks it up and crumples up, and we will never know. That's it.
But I was incredibly absorbed in that movie and kind of expected it to feel a little bit more like an exercise, and mm-hmm. especially an exercise to get Robert Redford an Oscar, which is also not how it feels, given how kind of laconic his performance is. And yeah, I was really, really, really into it. I was surprised how into it I was.
So do we think, I mean, I have been predicting him for quite some time, but do people agree with me that he has a good shot at Best Director?
I think so.
At getting a nomination, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
I feel like it's a little bit more of a long shot. I mean, I don't know quite why I feel that way, except for that there's a lot of big directors with big names, and now all of a sudden if Scorsese's being thrown back into the mix, I feel like it's an awfully crowded category when someone like Steve McQueen is already taking the new directors, new visions slot, really. Mm-hmm. But certainly I feel like the screenplay nomination for Margin Call last year, 2 years ago, when was it?
2 years ago.
Two years ago.
That certainly bodes well for him in that the Academy responds to his kind of stuff. I don't know. I feel like it's a very, very crowded and competitive category this year. And I feel like...
Aren't they all, though?
They do seem like it. I feel mm-hmm. like, and again, this sort of goes back to what Nick was saying about how strong October's been. Like, nothing has sort of, except for The Fifth Estate, nothing has really sort of volunteered its way out of the race. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I guess you could say The Counselor, if anybody really thought The Counselor had much of a shot, which I don't think a ton of people did. But you've got McQueen, and you've got Cuarón, and you've got now maybe Scorsese, and now you've got... I don't know,
Whatever happens with Spike Jonze, which I'm curious to see...
That's a huge wild card.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really thought that Wolf of Wall Street was going to happen in a substantial way. So I'm looking at that more as, like, it'll just be a very noisy late entry. But I just can't see, like, people just aren't nominated for every movie, you know?
Well, this is what I was kind of thinking last year about Django Unchained, though. I was just like, it's a late-breaking, it's Tarantino, it'll make a lot of noise, and all of a sudden it was just sort of like it got kind of swept in with the Tarantino enthusiasm. So I think that kind of thing could definitely happen with something.
Well, I mean, it could, but then on the other hand, like, last year did not have an October like this year.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Where things were already, like, wowing, you know?
Yeah. But I think if you're at least looking at the race where it seems like Cuarón, McQueen, Greengrass are there. You know what I mean? It's going to be really tough, I think, to budge any one of them out of there, unless the Academy just really doesn't go for one of those films.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's exciting. I feel like the relative strength of the movies means there's not a whole lot of options out there yet that I'm just dreading seeing them sort of stomp their way through the race, which is good. I can't imagine, say, John Wells getting a nomination for August Osage County, even if that movie is successful. So,
that will not happen.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, even if it was successful, that would be an easy out for them. You know, those actors' movies are always more difficult to end up with director nominations.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have any kind of clout or cachet, yeah.
So, but before we move on from All Is Lost, because I do want to talk about Wolf of Wall Street a tiny bit in terms of scheduling and release dates, did you guys like the opening monologue to All Is Lost?
Nope.
And I barely think about it, which probably tells you how much...
And I'm curious why, because, like, I liked it, but I also felt it was kind of... It never quite connected to the rest of the movie for me.
Yeah.
But I liked hearing his voice, and I liked the sort of minimalist poetry of it. But you didn't like it at all.
Well, I kind of lived in dread of it coming back into figure, that there was going to be some... I mean, spoiler alerts, whatever, but there was going to be some scene now where Kathleen Quinlan gets the letter and you meet her, you know, or that it just seemed like it was imposing a kind of narrative expectation on a film that, like, literally in the next shot, when it was so amazing that there's no, like, here's how great it was on this boat for 15 minutes until I ran into something, like, it just is off and running. So it seemed just weirdly out of sync with how focused everything else is, and kept suggesting that some larger framework was going to come back in, and I thought it kind of gestured toward an audience that's wondering, why is he out in the Indian Ocean anyway? Mm-hmm. But that question seems so much stranger when you slightly raise it, but then back off it, than if you just shut up about it. Mm-hmm.
But don't you think that the movie wouldn't have had sort of like it's more like sort of elegiac tone, and like if he hadn't prefaced it?
I think it would have, because I thought I was watching a 74-year-old guy who's incredibly fit and seems to know, like, it wasn't a story about an everyman stranded. It was somebody who thinks he knows how to handle a lot of things and is incredibly prepared, who's still not prepared for this. Mm-hmm. And that was...
That would be enough for you for, like...
Poignant enough to me, yeah.
Yeah, okay. As you all know, Monuments Men moved to 2014.
And which, can we just recall that I predicted that like 4 podcasts ago? Can we just have a
second? Did you really?
Say that. Yes.
Wait, between
what?
Between that and the Kathleen Quinlan thing, you are on fire today. There was no better actress to pick for your imaginary Robert Redford wife in that movie. It would have been perfectly fit, too, because like all of those like semi-random supporting actress nominees of the early 90s are sort of popping up with like Juliette Lewis in Osage County and Rosie Perez was in The Counselor for like 2 seconds, and Mare Winningham on Coven.
I knew you.
There's
were
a trend. Like Rosemary Harris has got to get on the ball or something like that. Oh, Mare Winningham in Coven. I can't. I cannot.
I was laughing so hard at Richard Law's tweet about her.
Oh, what did he say?
He was like. It was like Mare Winningham to Evan Peters rapping Coven.
Oh, yeah.
It was nice to meet you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Richard's fantastic.
For those of you who don't watch, she played the mother of the zombie in it. And it turns out that she was sexually abusing her son his whole life.
It was rough.
So she has a little sex scene with the zombie.
Great. And the art takes a step forward.
Okay, so...
Monuments Men moves.
Yes.
And, of course, Wolf of Wall Street comes back, but it was never really gone. People were just excitable as they are on the internet.
Just wanted it to be gone.
And I say get it over with. Just bring it on for Christmas. It's fine. That shows how excited I am for it.
Sorry, Katie. We're all offending you here.
I know. Seriously. It looks fun. It looks fun.
Well, wasn't Leo taking a break after this one?
Was he?
I thought he had some hiatus coming up.
How would you be able to tell the difference between a break and him just not feeling like making movies? I just feel like he pops up on his own time anyway.
Took a nice little winter's nap during Great Gatsby.
I feel like like the only actor retirement I've taken seriously is Goldie Hawn's, because she's the one who just sort of really hasn't been in anything. Like everybody
Gene
else.
Hackman.
Just...
Gene Hackman.
Yeah, Gene Hackman too.
No, he's Boy. Stuck with it. And you know what? I actually believe Ryan Gosling's thing about taking a few years off.
I guess so. I don't know. It just feels like it's all this like Zellwegerian thing where it's just sort of like, I'm going to be retiring and now please enjoy Miss Potter and Case 39 while I retire. It's just like, okay, I guess.
I don't think that was a voluntary retirement.
Yeah.
But didn't she say something about like, I'm going to be taking some time off or something like that? And it's just like, okay.
That's what I would say if I knew I had Bridget Jones, The Edge of Reason in the can. Like, I have retired, by the way, so don't believe anything else you hear. But that was an amazing way to turn The Wolf of Wall Street into a Goldie Hawn conversation. Wow.
Listen, I'm not going to say I'm not a skilled conversationalist in that way.
Goldie becomes him.
But, like, okay, so Goldie Hawn and Gene Hackman both in a movie directed by Shirley MacLaine, let's say, where it just sort of, like, gets all... So the Banger Sisters and Welcome to Mooseport are not the last movies that they've done. Like, let's just
The Banger Sisters, she's good in that.
Sure? Okay. I don't know. I feel like, well, maybe Goldie Hawn's not the one just who you need to be like, she deserves a more high-class exit. Like, that's probably fine. That's probably right. Welcome to Mooseport, though. Come on now. Anyway.
Well, it's better than Warren Beatty's exit was Town and Gray, right?
Oh, all right, the three of them then. Yeah, like Warren Beatty direct. Shirley can be a supporting actress. I'm going to save my Shirley MacLaine lament for when Walter Mitty opens and I can really just start wailing.
I feel lost. I have my astrolabe out. I don't know where we are.
Joe had a preferred question for this.
Oh,
topic.
Yeah. That's true. Just that. With all the movies sort of like moving to and fro over the 2013 line, I started thinking about how we could maybe swap in, like we swapped out Monuments Men, maybe we swap in something from 2013 that we're really interested in, or maybe something from 2012 that we wish had maybe waited around for 2013 because that sort of got crowded out, although it's generally, it seems like it would be more likely to be crowded out of 2013 now because it's so much more... This year feels so much more competitive.
Well, I have an immediate answer to this, so I'm going to go first.
Yes, go.
I wish that Django Unchained had waited a few months to come out so everybody could realize how stupid that Best Picture nomination was because they would have to compare it to 12 Years a Slave.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Oh,
that movie does not compare well at all with 10 months of retrospect. And I mean,
I realize they have different goals. Like, I'm not trying to be like
right, but it just it. No, that was one of my actually like the day I saw 12 Years a Slave. I'm eternally grumpy about Django Unchained anyway. So like, this is also my problem. But like, it just really sort of underlying the fact that like, wow, Quentin Tarantino's take on this subject versus a take that had a little bit more gravity to it.
Well, I mean, and it, you know, Django Unchained won 2 Oscars, so anyway, I'm just saying they better treat 12 Years a Slave, right?
As two-time Oscar winner Christoph Waltz, they really love that guy.
I feel like
poured cold water
on the
podcast.
Oh my god,
that's such a weird
stat. Well, the giant east of Austria.
The one I was thinking about when we were talking about the Gothams earlier, I almost sort of went into it then, but Frances Ha really could have opened last year, and it could have, at the very least, presented itself for Indie Spirit consideration, the sort of Hurt Locker style of, you know, doing Indie Spirits the year before. Mm-hmm. And I the Best Actress is so crowded this year, and there's really no guarantee at all that Greta Gerwig or the movie itself would have had more traction last year, but certainly there would have been more of a shot than there seems to be this year. I feel like that's a movie that it had opened in, say, early November, because it premiered, or didn't premiere, it screened at New York Film Festival in October, so it was like ready then.
And in Toronto. And
maybe some of that, like Naomi Watts, The Impossible Heat doesn't happen if you have buzz around somebody like Greta Gerwig. And I know it's probably more likely that she might have... I mean, maybe it's not more likely. Like, Emmanuel Riva and Quvenzhané Wallace had Best Picture nominations to show for it. The Impossible
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say there's a certain amount of retrospect inevitability that always sets in when you look
Absolutely.
Back on previous races.
Yeah, this is Flights of Fancy, like, of the highest regard.
Yeah, but I know it's, like, not the case while you're living it, but when you look back, you're like, of course it was those five women, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Well, this was exactly my answer as well. that if you move Frances Ha back, like, since it, there just seemed like such a general reluctance around The Impossible and Rust and Bone and Hitchcock and the other women that were kind of competing for that fifth spot, that I think a nice breath of fresh air would have done everybody a lot of good. My other answer was moving, this will speak to Nathaniel. it's moving Farewell My Queen ahead to this year, because if Blue is the Warmest Color were out and Léa Seydoux were on people's radars, I think that movie might have had a little more ability to... I mean, it actually did quite
it did well at
the box office compared to foreign movies, but I thought that critics kind of noticed it less than audiences in a way, and I just thought it was super. And so if it came out this month, I think it would also be in contention for things like costume and art direction that it probably deserved. And certainly Diane Kruger, my God.
Yeah.
But I was looking at the animated film lineup for this year, which is pretty weak. You know, Monsters University is the Pixar effort, and it's kind of whatever. And then Frozen may or may not be good. And I adored... Uh-oh. You guys cut out for me, I assume.
Yeah,
I assume you stopped hearing me.
We lost you at I adored.
At the most dramatic moment. Too.
I know. Should I just start? Should I start again, or should I hang up and try to start this whole thing again?
No, just say what you adored.
Okay, I adored Paranorman, which I thought got really underseen and underappreciated.
Paranorman really was one of those movies that of all the animated movies last year, that was the one that I most heard from people being like, "This is a really great movie. I really love it. Nobody's talking about it." And those are the movies that you just sort of. Something in your mind is like, with the, you know, with a better promotional push, maybe more people would have seen it.
Yeah, I mean, almost any of the animated features last year, if they had come out this year, would have been the front runner.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really
but
is.
But you can't really...
Kind of a wasteland.
I mean, Frozen will probably change that, I'm guessing. But
did you see that? You
I
saw
did.
That?
I have seen it, yeah.
And Frozen is a take on which fairy
tale? Wicked on Broadway? No, It's supposedly based on the Snow Queen, but you won't really recognize it.
Yeah, okay, I don't know that story anyway. Okay.
She must
Hello?
Be.
Hi.
Hey.
Okay.
Oh, you're back.
Right. Yay!
Okay, so we talked about Paranorman
okay.
in your absence, and we agree that it would have been a much bigger deal this year.
Good! And
excellent
maybe we
choice.
Can...
but,
no,
and an excellent segue to our exit question. As you may have noticed, we were having a few technical difficulties. The voices cut out here. I was about to ask everyone which movie costume they'd wear for Halloween, and lamenting that we hadn't even discussed horror films. So,
we talked about The Counselor. It's...
it's too bad that wasn't better, because then people could dress up as Cameron Diaz in her cheetah prints.
Oh my god, what a good costume.
Honestly.
I might still do that. There's a couple days left.
One sleeve off the shoulder, you're good to go. Like, absolutely.
Yeah, cheetah prints everywhere. Yep. Cheetah print fake tattoos.
Yep, totally.
For our exit question, I just want to ask people which movie character they would like to dress up as besides Cameron Diaz.
I think I would dress up as George Clooney from Gravity, if only because if I end up in a conversation that I'm not entirely enjoying, I can just drift away backwards. And I can't help it. Go save yourself.
What a good idea.
I think I will either dress up as the guy with the hole in his face in Gravity, because that, again, is obviously who I would have been in that scenario. Or maybe a salmon in the Yemen. I wanted to do that for like a
Always
year.
Always bring it back to salmon.
Yeah.
I want to choose Jasmine and Blue Jasmine, because it's an excuse to buy very expensive clothes and to drink martinis all night. It's kind of a win-win.
And talk to yourself if you don't want to talk to those boring fucking people at the party.
And be really mean to everybody. There's so many advantages to
this. And drink a lot.
Yes.
I would probably end up in the same costume as Nick, because I was one of those little boys who would throw himself at the dodgeball just to get out of the game. I don't want to suffer, so I asteroid, come at me.
Space debris for me, please.